kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
My mother has this beautiful dining room set, but two of the chairs make legit fart sounds every time anybody sits. So it's just a beautiful, like, fancy set. And literally, she has labeled them with sticky notes. It says fart chair. I'm like, this is really classy.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining me is guest co-host this week. Welcome back, Cole Martin. Cole, how are you doing?
I'm alive and kicking, although I sound a little different than usual because I've got pneumonia
again. Oh, nice.
Fuck yeah. So, you know, but I'm all right. Other than that, I'm on the upswing. I sound better than I did. And then I start coughing, but I sound better than I did.
How are you doing today? I'm doing... Pretty good ass, you know, all things considered.
Randomly having a hacking fit, you know.
All things considered, doing pretty all right. But we're we're not the only ones coughing and wheezing on this episode. Also joining the show from the Deep End Games, Amanda Gardner. How are you doing today?
I am not wheezing, but I can if you want me to.
I mean, you know, if you want to be a part of the group, you're more than welcome to.
I'll barf up a lung.
Well, I feel great today, but I feel left out, so does that work?
It's all the cool kids are doing it.
You can just stand by with the puns, and every time I cough, be like, cough it up, it ain't yours, or something.
We need a wah-wah button.
We do. We talk about that all the time. One of my older co-hosts, Chris Huber, he used to want to have a weekly wah-wah, where we would just find the... the dumbest thing that has happened that week and single it out is, oh, yep, that's the weekly wah wah.
But how do you choose one? We say a lot of dumb shit.
We do say a lot of dumb shit on this show. So, yeah, welcome to our dumb show. How are you doing today?
Yes. That's fantastic. Fantastic.
How many podcasts introduce you with welcome to our dumb show?
or you know, sort of haze me into being sick. None of them. this is
we're making a mark on the world.
We are. This is our niche in the world. Getting people to cough and curse on our show. Anyway, you are from the Deep End Games. You released the game Perception. I know we covered it a couple of months ago. I don't recall offhand on Xbox One. It just recently released on the Switch. And then you mentioned it also got a large patch across all platforms. Let's start with the easy stuff. For the people who don't know what Perception is, give us the sales pitch.
All right. Well, Perception is a thriller about a blind woman's journey to prove herself by solving the mysteries from the mansion from her nightmares. So she uses echolocation, which is actually a real thing, where you make a sound and you can essentially see the way a bat does. So she, the more noise she makes, the more she can perceive her surroundings. But the more noise she makes, well, she's in a haunted mansion. So you may not want to make a lot of noise.
And a haunted mansion.
A haunted mansion, yes. So it's got some spoopy vibes. I
said that. So glad you said spoopy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, honestly, when it first came out, a lot of people were saying that it was a horror game, and we really want to get away from that. It's much more of a thriller. It's much more tense and narrative and psychological rather than, like, you know, an axe to your crotch, for example, like Outlast 2. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like in your face horror. It's and so I feel like spoopy is an accurate word. I have no problem with the spoop. I've dropped the spoop on the reg. So yeah,
dropped the spoop on the reg. Oh my God, you're incredible.
Spooped on the failings. Why did it take so long to get her here?
See, in my mind, I would still consider it horror, but I would go with, like, psychological horror.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. So, I feel like horror has sort of a broader definition in movies and a more narrow definition in games. So mm-hmm. to help people understand what kind of game they're going to experience, we like to say thriller. But yeah, psychological horror is definitely good. But it's not going to be 24/7 jump scares. It's going to be more like unsettling angst, you know, like The Shining style kind of. Which was a huge inspiration for us. So,
gotcha. When I think thrillers, I think of like thriller movies, of like an action thriller, of like, they're coming to steal my son, and I have to like get the independence Declaration of Independence or something in 24. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, I just don't see it as like horror. I don't know.
Exception thrillers. Too, if you want, you know, we can.
Like Amanda said psychological thriller. That's what I tend to think of because that's my favorite genre.
Makes sense.
And I've mentioned before on the show that when it comes to games, there's not enough of those because they are my favorite. I like the games with the blood and gore. I enjoyed Outlast too. I reviewed it too. But the games that just make you like, you don't want to turn that fucking corner.
Right.
That's the best. It's what your own mind does to you that can far surpass anything that blood and gore. You can get desensitized to blood and gore, but your own brain can find a mutiny of ways to fuck you.
And we really tried to embrace the whole darkness in the game because darkness is the enemy of, you know, lightness is the enemy of horror because horror is essentially the unknown. Like that's the truth of horror is the unknown. And so we really sort of embrace that in Perception. Like, yeah, you don't know what's around the next corner. You don't know any, like you're blind. Like you're taking your best guess as to what's going on. So yeah, we really tried to embrace that whole darkness and lack of information in the game. And yeah, so you mentioned the remaster. The game came out on PS4, Xbox One, and Steam in the spring. And when it came out, Bill and I decided to take a lot of the really fantastic feedback we got and just really enhance the game. So we added two new modes where so a lot of people were like, oh, you know, I love the story, but like, I'm so scared. So we added story mode so that you can't die. And a lot of people were like, yeah, this is spooky, but we really like want a lot more tension. So we're like, okay, we added a scary mode so that like dying has like serious consequences. And we added a whole warning system and like new audio and streamlined the story. So like, we really like, this wasn't just a patch. This was like a remaster. So
interesting, which you don't see often people doing like a full complete overhaul of a game when it's just a quote patch. So that is really cool to see. Before we get too far, we Dark Mika in our chat room has a couple of comments. The first one is that she believes it is totally a horror game because it scares you hard, and quote, the game damn near made me fucking fear pee in like the first hour of playing it. Which
fear pee is our measurement of how scary something is, like if it actually makes you fear pee.
It is. Every time Cole records a review for any type of horror game, I ask, did you fear pee?
Did you fear pee? All right. Okay,
I guess Cole, totally. With Perception, did you fear pee?
I did. You know what? I fear peed a little more. I was much more scared prior to the remaster. But that's not a bad thing because before it was patched, I never knew, like, I would just barely ever click the cane and be like, oh, fuck, the house is listening. It's going to get me. I don't know. But there are instances where the house isn't listening. There are instances where you can make a little more noise or where you really fucking shouldn't tap that cane. And you didn't know. But now that it's remastered, I keep cutting off the developer. How wonderful of an interviewer am I?
No. You know, I cut people off all the time. It's because my kids, I have four kids, they won't let me finish a thought. So sometimes I just, like, bulldoze through a conversation. So please stop me.
I've got three. I'm right there with you.
In the trenches.
So, you know, like, there's just now. They don't let you finish a conversation either. The instances since the remaster, at least now I know if I'm going into an area and I'm click happy as fuck and I'm pushing that cane too much, I know if it's going to damage me or not and set me back. Right. Whereas before, I just had to rely on my brain fucking with me as to whether or not it was okay to go.
Right.
And, like, I spent so much time my first playthrough just sitting behind random pieces of, like, paintings and hiding because I didn't have any idea what the fuck was going to happen now. And replaying it, I didn't have that same response. I was able to explore a little more without just randomly, like, yeah, walking into something.
That's what we wanted. There's so much story. Like, there's really so much to find out and explore. And we found, like, Bill and I watched hundreds of hours of playthroughs, and we're like, oh my god, people aren't picking that up, people aren't catching that, and we were like, oh, it's because they're fucking too scared to move, you know. So we really wanted people to enjoy the story more, and I think that, like, for people like me, story mode is the way to go. Like, I would much rather, like, immerse myself in the narrative than get the pants scared off of me. But, you know, it's still definitely spooky if you play it that way. It's just not like, oh God, I'm hiding it. Like you said, you know, under a trash can, you know, doing the rosary. So.
Do you ever go into people streaming the game? And if they're about to miss something because, you know, you said they're too fucking scared to check something out, do you ever jump in the comments and be like, hey, pussy, click over there?
No, but that's
kind of, you should.
Do it, loser. Just, who are you and why are you cursing me? Oh, you developed the game. Well, yeah, I did. I guess I really am a chicken shit. But thank you for the tip. Dark Mika has a question. You mentioned tapping the cane. I know Cole did. Did you just guess at echolocation or did you study it and talk with people who had it?
Oh my God, we would never just guess. Bill spent his entire master's degree final thesis on echolocation, blind technology, low vision technology, adaptive technology. I mean, like, I think we put like a year of research into this sort of thing because it's important to be respectful of the blind and low vision communities. And we didn't want to just go out there and make this look like a superpower. Like, that is incredibly disrespectful. It's a real thing. And so obviously, you know, Bill did his, you know, thesis on it. I studied it. We are fortunate enough to live near Perkins School for the Blind, so we conducted numerous interviews, interviewed blind gamers, and the best part was we went out to dinner with Daniel Kish, who is the head of World Access for the Blind, and he himself is an echolocator, and he teaches, his charity is to teach blind people to navigate their world through sound. He is a human miracle. The man has no eyes. And yet we walked around the cobblestone streets of Boston and had a sushi dinner with him. And it was the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my life. He is truly amazing. I mean, think about how complicated eating sushi is. You've got chopsticks, you've got little things you dunk. I mean, he was just sitting there talking to us completely blind and knowing where everything was on the table. And, you know, like, walking around Boston, like, I was terrified. I was like, oh my God, I need to, like, protect him. Like, we're crossing the street. He was fine. He was just making his sounds, echolocating. And that is his passion, is to teach blind people. And he, if you go to World Access for the Blind website, there are videos of him, mountain biking, like legit mountain biking and teaching people just how to navigate the world. And it's just amazing. And there's this one scene where he's in the street with a bunch of blind children and they're learning to echolocate. And one says, oh, there's a pothole over there. And it's just like, you're like, oh my God, how do they know that? And they get to a doorway and somebody says, okay, tell me about this doorway. And the kid starts making clicking sounds. He goes, it's not a doorway, it's an arch. And you back out and you can see that it's round. Like, it's real. It's amazing.
That is insane. It's
amazing. Like, I have to say, like, Google Daniel Kish TED Talk, and it's like a life-changing thing. He shows you how he echoes. It's amazing.
See, Daniel.
Kish, K-I-S-H. So, yes, we did our research.
Well, now I know what I'm going to, how I use sonar to navigate the world. I'm guessing that's it.
Yep, that's it. He's incredible.
I will have to make sure to include that in the show notes in case people want to check out the link to that.
That would be amazing, because the more people who know that this is real, the better. A lot of people I talk to are like, blind people don't see that way. And we're like, well, some do. I mean, not everybody does, obviously, but some people can. It essentially rewires the cerebral cortex so that the part of your brain that receives sight actually receives it. It just doesn't receive it through the eyes. I mean, it's amazing.
That is nuts. So is there, this is an odd question to ask, because the way that you have visually represented echolocation in the game, is there any way to compare that to what someone who has echolocation or who can use it, how it looks to them?
Yeah, this is an artistic representation of it, definitely. And there was a lot of choice involved. You know, I mean, what color are we going to make it? So one of the things that Bill studied in his degree is in human factors and information design. And he said that one of the universal things is, like, blue is universally accepted as darkness. Like, across cultures, across the world, like, blue is darkness. So we were like, okay, let's go with blue. And then there were all these fine-tuning things, like, okay, when you tap, how far does it go out? How long does it last? Does it snap back immediately? Does it leave a little pool? You know, does it ripple? Like, we had so many questions that we sort of had to ask ourselves about how we wanted it to look. And essentially, it came down to, like, how does it feel? You know, click, trial and error. Oh, that was too fast. Oh, that was too slow. Oh, I think that rippled out too far. Okay, are the edges of the desk, are they going to be sharp or are they going to be sort of blurred? You know, we had a lot of questions like that.
Gotcha. Go ahead, Cole.
I would imagine that for somebody that is blind too, you would have to take into consideration whether Cassie was blind her entire life, she was born that way, or if she had sight at some point, how much would she be able to transpire on her own based on how things would look versus how they sound.
Yes.
I imagine that's something you would have to take into consideration. Like, if she had sight at some point, she might be aware of what a desk would look like and if it would have had, you know, square edges or round.
Right.
So, like, she's not just guessing at what these things would look like based on what they sound like. She might have some kind of reference.
Right. There is some previous possible. I don't want to spoil anything. So, yes.
That's what I was trying to not do.
How can we talk about this and not?
But it would affect, you know, like, how a character, I'm assuming how you would design how a character like her would see things.
Yeah. There's a lot.
Reference or not.
There was a lot involved in the creation of Cassie, for sure.
One of the things that I thought was most creative in how you guys approached that design too was there's paintings in the house, as there would be, but she can't see the you know, what is painted on there.
Right.
She does, however, like, the echolocation kind of gives you an image of what the tooth of the paper is.
Yeah, we
have, and I thought that was a really interesting detail, that would be something she could touch and she could get an idea of that texture.
Right. You know, Bill and I, there were so many surfaces that we found interesting. You know, like, we thought about, like, okay, what makes an old house cool and interesting? Like, the creaky, horrible sounds it makes. And this is a heavily audio game. And, you know, if you're blind, texture means so much. So we even thought about things like, what would Cassie wear? Like, so we have her wearing this leather jacket that's got, like, these really cool textured arms and, like, you know, so that she can enjoy things, you know, the aesthetic of something without having to see it. So it's funny because, like, so much environmental storytelling is like, oh, what are the pictures on the desk? What are the paintings on the wall? And we can't, you know, we couldn't rely on that. And Bill kind of jokes that in so many video games, there's, like, a scrawl of blood on the wall. And we're like, oh, we really can't get away with
that. We don't have that luxury. Yeah.
Unless you use the friendly eyes app, so.
Which was a neat addition, and it's not a far-fetched thing. It fits well. And I had to laugh. The Delphi voice. My brother-in-law is blind, and so I'm used to hearing the voices used for those apps and things.
Yeah,
and I was just like, that is so familiar. I recognize that voice as one of those, you know, hoping eyes type apps. That's just the moment you hear it.
And Friendly Eyes is loosely based on a real app called Be My Eyes that does the same thing. It essentially connects a blind person who uses their smartphone camera to a community volunteer who's, you know, our guy is just sitting around cat sitting for the day, so he doesn't mind helping out. So yeah, the person on the other end. So say you're blind and you're at a vending machine and there's no Braille, but you want a Coke. So you would use the Be My Eyes app, and the person would be like, oh, just find C4. It's the third one to the left. And they would, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's really cool. It's really helpful.
That is really neat.
Technology, man. Very cool.
It's amazing what we take for granted having sight.
Mm-hmm.
Just crazy.
Yeah. Bill and I, we spent a couple days with our phone in that blind mode where it just would read things to you. So you would touch it and it would be like, messages, pictures. And then you would click pictures. Pictures from September 28th. Pictures from September 29th. You know, like just... And it just reads everything on the phone to you because, you know, you can't have Braille on a phone. That's why, mm-hmm. you know. So.
My brother-in-law, when he uses his computer, he has a monitor in case he needs to turn it on to show my sister something. But otherwise, he just leaves it off.
Yeah.
And, you know, everything is right on the screen. He even goes into his settings in, like, his web browsers and stuff and shuts it off to where it doesn't even bother loading pictures.
Right.
So
yeah.
Because it just goes through and reads all the text to him anyway.
It's really neat.
This is why web designers, it's really important to have alternative text in your images.
Absolutely.
As a side note. But,
very true.
But it is just one of those things. And it was neat to see in Perception how all those kind of little details like that things we would take for granted in being visual, how they are included in Cassie and her world around her. It made it much more believable and immersive, and you really got to understand how she interacted with her world.
Right. Thank you.
So what other changes... Go ahead.
No, I'm done now, no. Joe.
I was going to ask, what other changes and updates have been made to the game with this, the patch and the remaster that released?
Sure. So, like I said, the two new modes. We sort of briefly touched on, like, there's a new sort of warning system when the house is listening to you, when it isn't, when, you know, when the presence is spawned, when the presence is nearby. So it gives you a much better idea of, you know, how you're doing, how close you are to death. And there's a lot of, like, story streamline changes. Like, so I, by trade, I taught high school English for 12 years, and I write novels. And my writing tends to be a little bit subtle. And so, like, when we were watching a lot of the playthroughs, we noticed, like, oh, you know, people aren't 100% sure about what happens at the end of level 2. Let's clarify that. Let's streamline that. So we got Angela Morris back in the studio who played Cassie, and we recorded some more lines that we thought were a little bit clearer. We removed some sort of red herring stuff to get people off track. It was just too confusing. We clarified the ending. We added some new sounds. We added, Bill just did a lot of tweaking. Like he sort of spent some time in the house really refining it and changing a couple of rooms around and adding touchstone counters so that you know how many are in a level, which are very helpful. A load of things, just a load of observations we made that we wanted to tweak and make better. We want more people to be able to enjoy this game.
So I'm guessing this is all stuff that basically complaints people may have had with the game that you were trying to address and just overall make it a better experience.
You know, I don't know about complaints. It was more just general feedback. I mean, some were complaints, some were, you know, just sort of things that we were watching and they weren't. So we obviously did plenty of QA and plenty of focus testing, but watching, you know, it's such a different world. It's such an amazing world where you just watch people play our game at any point in time. And we made so many observations during that time that we were just like, the game is a living, breathing thing. We can change it at any point. So we changed it, you know?
Here's an interesting question, because I've seen other games do this. Are you able to go in and alter a game while someone's playing?
No, damn. No. So we would have to, a lot goes into making a patch and, you know, a brand new build. It's got to be tested. It's got, you know, you got to make sure you can't break it. There's a bunch that goes into it. And then the patch goes live. But that's technical stuff. I'm the writer, man. I don't know. Like, people push buttons and things happen. I don't know.
I just remember the game Cluster Truck from, you know, we covered that one a while back, and the developers of that actually left some kind of back door in the game. It's meant to have like Twitch integration when people stream it, and there's ways for people to fuck with you. And the developers of Cluster Truck would routinely watch people streaming the game and just go into their game and be like, we're taking over, and
really?
Just completely mess with things.
That sounds interesting.
So I'm not sure how possible that would be on your kind of game to have some form of back door.
Yeah.
But if you saw someone streaming the game and you're like, hey, someone's streaming this, let's go ruin their night.
Just have the present sneak up on them even though they haven't that would be amazing.
Let's make the fear pee happen.
Because I'd be pissed, but if somebody else was doing it, you just scare the ever-loving tarnation out of somebody.
I think that'd be fun to do in a horror game. They just, where the developers have a way to just get into whatever game you're playing and just ruin your night in every way.
You're giving me ideas, people. You're giving me ideas.
That's what I'm here for, to give good good and bad ideas, usually bad. Every now and then a good one does sneak through.
Well, I mean, you just got to throw stuff at the wall until it sticks, right?
Exactly.
Like spaghetti.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to know, when you start up the game, it says that it's based on a true story.
Yes.
I'd like to know more about that.
It's pretty wild, pretty wild. So at the very end of the game, it's revealed that, I don't know how deep and spoilery I want to get, but essentially you find out that the reason the mansion's cursed is the same thing that happened to Bill's ancestor back in colonial Massachusetts. And so we took the story from his family history that we've been talking about for years. You know, I mean, you know, everybody in his family knows what happened to Susanna Martin. And we sort of merged it with this narrative about this woman, Cassie, and this fictional mansion. And yeah, it's definitely a true story. It's a total tragedy. But yeah, it's a family story. Yeah.
We shouldn't go into too many more details, huh?
Yeah, I'm like, oh, I really should play a couple cards close to my chest. But
I think, though, that the overarching story there, without giving away what happens, it's easy to miss that main theme of women overcoming oppression.
Mm-hmm.
Until you get that final tidbit. Like, it's easy just to think you're getting a couple of separate stories.
Yeah.
That are gonna tie up some way, but when you really get that final tidbit,
yeah,
that's when it all kind of comes together and you just realize what every one of these characters have gone through, and the struggle and the strife and the strength that it took to get through those struggles.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is really this kind of the key point of the game.
I'd say so, yeah.
Did you find that people kind of missed on that point?
Definitely before the remaster. It was really frustrating because, you know, I wrote this feminist game, and one of the first reviews I read was like, this game's about how women is crazy. And I was like, oh, that's literally the opposite. Oh, my God. No. Anyway, I mean, that was just an absolute dumpster fire of a review anyway. Like, they got everything wrong. But I'm not going to get into that. But, you know, it was frustrating because, you know, I think that it's an important subject to talk about, is how, you know, women have been treated and, you know, basically transcending that and rising above it. And when I do hear people who kind of get that at the end, I'm like, oh, awesome, fantastic. And so we tried to make it a little more prominent in the remaster so that people understood the themes. Like, if I was too subtle, you know, we punched it up a little. So, yeah.
Did you find that using a game as that kind of medium for a feminist story, were you concerned about the reception of that? Because if you pay any attention to gaming media at all, like when feminism becomes a prominent topic, shit hits the fan.
No.
Were you concerned about that with your story?
Bill and I have a story to tell with Perception, and like the game is very polarizing. You either love it or hate it, and I honestly, I'd rather have that than a bunch of, you know, 75s. You know, I'd rather have some people who totally get it, who totally love it, and some people who are just like, oh, whatever, it's like a Daredevil simulator. Like, that's fine. That's fine. Like, we have a story to tell. And in fact, I'm actually disappointed that more people haven't caught on to the feminism thing, because I would love to have these conversations with people. Like, I want these conversations to happen. You know, if more reviews had picked up on that, I don't care if there was a backlash among people who were like, oh, feminism. Like, I want to have these conversations. Like, I think that that's part of the point. So, yeah, hell yeah. Like, bring it.
I'm excited to hear somebody that's like, yeah, I will argue with you about feminism in gaming. Let's go. Because that's me all the time, and I'm alone.
I'm a disgusting man, so.
I started a fire, and I don't know how to talk. I don't have anybody to help me watch it burn.
Here's some gasoline.
I'm a filthy, terrible man, so I feel so left out of this right now.
No, it's not. It's not about men being filthy and terrible. It's about identifying a problem and you know, sort of having that.
Oh no, completely unrelated. I'm terrible. Yeah. It has nothing to do. I'm just a terrible person in general.
Oh, clarification.
Yeah.
You're all right in my book, Joe.
Thanks. I fake it well.
I don't know how much my book is worth. You're all right in
my book. So I did want to ask you about another game. A game called Beyond Eyes released a bit ago, which also details the story of a blind woman. Have you played that, and what are your thoughts on that game?
So we played it briefly, you know, after we had already kickstarted the game. So, I mean, our concept was fully formed at that point, and it's a different point of view. We thought it was interesting what they were doing, but, I mean, it's something totally... It's different from what we did, and that's fine. And I know that synchronicity happens. Like, there happens to be another echolocation game out there. I think it's a VR game. And people are like, oh, did they rip you off, or did you rip them off? And we're like, no, man, synchronicity. Sometimes people have similar ideas at similar times. And, you know, that just happens. But, yeah, we definitely played that game, and it was really neat.
What did you think in their... visually stylistic choice of, with them, everything was white, but with swirls of colors to accent things. And in your game, everything is significantly darker.
Right, right. Well, I mean, so first of all, theirs isn't really about echolocation. She was sort of sensing her world however she sensed it. And for me, that kind of made sense to have swirls of color, because for me, it was about a child and her imagination. Mm-hmm. And so she was smelling the air and touching the flowers, and that sort of worked. But this, you know, the darkness and the echolocation, you know, you're in a haunted mansion. I think that worked for us, you know, what our style worked for us and their style worked for them.
Sounds good. I wasn't sure if you guys were aware of that game and if you've played it and what your thoughts were, stuff like that.
Yeah, it was nifty. It was really neat.
Nice. Cole, what other questions do you have? I feel bad not being able to talk about the game as much. I thought I owned it and I went to play it and I'm like, oh my God, I don't own this. And I just haven't had money for it. So I've been stuck watching people do live streams of it.
It's on sale.
It is on sale.
Is it on sale?
Sales are wait, good.
On Steam or on Xbox?
On Steam.
Shit, my PC. And,
I mean, it's actually only 15 on the Switch, which is pretty.
I might have to grab it on Switch then.
Yeah,
I didn't know it was cheaper on Switch.
It is, and it's fun to play under the covers.
I thought my kid was the only one that did that. And I see it and I get so aggravated. I'm like, what are you doing? Uncover your head. I have odd kids. And I just thought that was her being odd. But well, apparently it's not.
That leads to a good question, though. What kind of difference could people expect to see in the Switch version compared to the other platforms?
So the remaster, we wanted the remaster and the Switch version to be the same thing released on the same day. But on the Switch, you know, you have the ability to take it places, you know. So it's really just the only real difference is that you can, you know, make yourself a little fort, a little ghost fort. I mean, I love it on the Switch. I think it's really fun. I just think it's a fun system, and we're a huge Nintendo family, and my console of choice for playing Perception is the Switch. It just feels good. I just love that portable screen. I love the ability to just plug it in and take it anywhere. So that's my choice.
Does it look and run better when docked as opposed to undocked? I know some games are like that.
I'd say it's the same.
Same. Gotcha. Wow, I didn't know it was cheaper on the Switch. I might have to just pick up the Switch version. Holy shit.
Enjoy.
See, we're all learning things today. Do you have any plans to support anything with like the Xbox One X or the PS4 Pro in terms of enhanced visuals or HDR support?
There's no plans for that. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility, but it's not something we're talking about right now.
Gotcha. Waiting for Cole to chime in with anything. Or did you run out of questions, Cole?
I had notes and I have questions on them and I asked them all, or you asked some variant of them and now I'm SOL.
Now you're like just farting around in the chat room with Dark Mika.
Like a chair. Fart chair.
Dark Mika is asking, is the remastered a new game or that someone asked to buy, or if you own the original, do you already have the remastered stuff?
If you own the original, you have the remaster. It is a giant patch.
Cool. So just an update.
Yes, indeed.
Merry Christmas. That's how I like when people do it, where it's like, we're going to enhance the game in all these crazy ways. Oh, well, are you just going to re-release it and charge people for it again? No.
No.
They bought it. They can have it.
If people know anything about us, they know that we wouldn't do that. So Bill and I made this in our basement, chasing our four kids around. I mean, this is, you know, it's a family effort, team effort, like... You know, we'd be working on the game and then run upstairs and shoot some hoops with the kids. Or, you know, there have been times where I've been, you know, feeding the babies a bottle while, you know, filling in a spreadsheet about, you know, some bug. Like, you know, this was a home team effort. And we are definitely not, you know, a big company who's going to get out there and nickel and dime you for the remaster.
So we're not going to see loot crates for new character skins in the game.
I mean, that would be kind of funny if you're going up to the chest where you hide and then it'd just be like, sorry, you need $50 to hide in this location. And the presents eat you.
Teaching me how to monetize this game.
You're welcome. See, there's that's the spaghetti at the wall again.
Yep, seriously, just keep tossing it.
And charge for color palettes based on what you're tapping.
Are you tired of blue?
With the brand new Perception color pack.
Yeah. Oh my god. Oh my god. That's evil.
For only $9.99, you could get over 12 color palettes.
Speaking of colors and blue does the update for Perception add 4K enhancements for the Xbox One X or anything, or is there any kind of enhancements for the X?
I don't think so.
We don't care about the PS4 Pro. That's it. I didn't know if maybe we got some better load times or anything.
Yeah, no, it doesn't change.
That's something to put on your to-do list then. You're welcome!
Right after loot crates. Loot crates have got to come first. Get a sense of pride and accomplishment when you get that new color palette.
Mika said somebody would buy the fucking color pack, and I'd probably buy it. I'd buy, like, pink just because I could. I have this overwhelming urge just to make things in games pink just because I can, because there's so few games that... Well, it's gotten better in, like, the last year, maybe two. I don't even like the color pink. But I make everything pink just because I'm a girl and I can.
Just because you can.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like pink, so I make everything pink.
I do. It's true. Like pink's not even my favorite color, but it's like my dashboard color. And the only reason is because it shows up on other people's dashboards. So I want people to like see that I got added as a friend and be like, ugh. Girls don't play games. Pink. And like on Rocket League, my car is pink with like a unicorn horn and a rainbow flag. and I get called so many names, and I'm just sitting there going, don't care, like unicorns, yay! You know? BRB, going to fuck you now.
It's funny. So I had three sons and then a surprise daughter. And when I had the girl, I was like, I'm totally not going to just be doing pink everything. And now it's just like my life is pink.
It happened. I have three girls. And so my husband literally, he's like, you could cut me and I'd bleed pink at this point. I don't have a choice. We like the whole front part of the house. You can tell where my husband has his got to have a little input when we painted, because our master bedroom, I let him paint it blue because I felt bad.
He needed it. Good for you.
He needed it. I don't like blue either, for the record. Blue can also fuck off. But I let him paint it blue. And every night I go to bed, I'm like, ugh, I did this for him.
Blue's but my favorite color.
Sorry, Joe.
So mean.
Isn't it? If it makes me feel better, green is the most popular favorite color, and green is, like, my most hated color of all. You ever wonder how I survive as an artist when I hate, like, half the color wheel? I really do.
That sounds like a challenge.
Yeah. Maybe that's why I'm not a good artist.
Oh, man. Anyway, I know you mentioned that you really enjoy the Switch. What kind of games are you playing right now when you're not working on developing stuff or corralling your herd of children? What kind of games are you playing?
I'm playing Diaper Changer Simulator. Like, I have two babies, so it makes it hard to play games right now. But what I do is I peek over my kids' shoulders and I watch a lot of games. And man, I mean, Mario Odyssey and Breath of the Wild, and just, I mean, I mainly watch my kids play those and go, wow, these are so gorgeous. And like, I cannot wait. Like, I want to play Skyrim on the Switch so bad.
It's so cool.
Yeah, I know. So yeah, I mean, right now, like, so we worked on Perception for 3 years and had two kids in that span of 3 years. Our other two were older. So I've been like going at full tilt for years, and I really just want to settle down and play some, like, hunker down and play some good fucking games, you know? Like, give me a weekend to myself and just let me binge on all the games that I've been dying to play. Like, the newest Final Fantasy, that one with the road trip, like, I played like 15 minutes and I was like, dude, I love Final Fantasy, I just want to play more. And then I, you know, life gets in the way sometimes, but now that the game is out on all the systems, maybe I will get some glorious time to reconnect.
Yeah, I can commiserate with that, because we have the three girls, but my youngest started preschool this year. And so for 4 days a week, I just sit at home by myself.
Oh,
I don't know what to do with this life.
It must be so quiet.
Whatever you do, no, make sure pants are not involved.
Right? No pants, no problem.
Like, I'll be sitting there. No, that's not even a joke, because I'll be sitting there playing a game that I got to review, and I'll look at the clock. I'll be like, oh, it's time for the bus run. Fuck, I need to put on pants. I don't need to worry about putting on shoes to go out to get the kids, because I live in Kentucky. Everybody's barefoot anyway. But I got to put on some pants.
Yeah, but if you're going through the pickup line, do you really need, you know, like, if you stay in the car and they just bring the kid right out, you know?
Well, see, I live in redneck land. We don't even, we have the bus comes right to our door, because we live, like, we literally dirt road and all. We are way out there.
Wow.
And so the bus comes right to our, you know, the end of our driveway, which is at the end of the hill, which is still a little bit of a walk. So it requires pants for that walk.
Okay, that does make sense, yes.
But pants required. Just fuck off. I mean, when it's dirt road, whatever.
I think my proudest lazy moment was lounging on the couch, watching TV, doing whatever. Just lazy day, lounging in my underwear. Doorbell rings. I guess, you know, FedEx or UPS is here, someone. And I'm just like, well, they'll just leave it on the doorstep and they'll go away. And then it rings again. Oh, God, it must be something that requires a signature. Pants are in the bedroom. Shorts are in the bedroom. So I just grab a blanket, wrap myself up, and open the door. I'm like, sorry, lazy day. What do I got to sign?
I have a super embarrassing story. So I taught high school for years and years and years and years. And one night, this was before Bill and I had kids, we had like a really huge poker night at our house and we didn't clean up. And, you know, there were beer cans everywhere. There were poker chips everywhere. Because it was the weekend and like, fuck that, you know? So I woke up the next morning and hear a knock on my door. I'm wearing Legend of Zelda giant pajama pants and there's beer cans every square inch of my house. And the door rings and I thought it was my dad. So obviously I don't care if my dad sees, you know, me in ridiculous Zelda pants and beer cans everywhere. I open the door. It is one of my students coming around to collect money for like a school fundraiser. He looks at me and then looks behind me at like the trashed house full of beers. And then he just looks at me and he goes, I like your humble abode. And I was just like, oh my God, like I'll give you whatever money you need for this fundraiser if you never talk about this ever. I like your humble abode.
Oh my God, that's fantastic. Oh man, well I know we've been chatting for quite a bit now. Was there anything else that you wanted to discuss with the game or were with anything else in general?
No, I mean, we covered all sorts of great topics. Got to talk about the remaster and the themes and all the crazy stories about the chasing babies and making games. So, yeah, I mean, if you guys have any questions left for me, I'm good.
What comes next for you guys? Any games in development or is it now just relaxation time?
No, now that it's out on the Switch, it's really nice to be able to take a step back. But we're cooking up something. We can't talk about it, but we hope that people will love it. And exciting stuff, good stuff. And sorry, spoiler alert.
Well, I'm definitely looking forward to whatever you guys have in the works for next. And hopefully it will succeed in making Dark Mika officially fear pee.
I hope to make you all pee with fear.
Yes. Cole, any more questions from you?
No. Thanks for asking half my list, Joe.
Well, Cole, I hope you feel better.
Thank you for hanging out with us. It was really cool to get to talk to somebody else about feminism and gaming.
Yeah.
You can talk to me about throwing gas on the fire anytime.
Seriously, anytime. Consider it an open invitation and a lit match.
How about this? In a couple of weeks, we'll get everybody back together. Maybe you can find some other friends to join. I'll do an introduction, step away from the microphone, and y'all could say whatever the fuck you want.
Oh, we say whatever the fuck we want anyway, but...
But now you won't have me interrupting.
So. I'm always down. You guys keep me in your virtual Rolodex. I love to chat.
Absolutely. Thank you again so much for coming on and chatting about the game. Where can people stay in touch with you?
So at The Deep End Games on Twitter, I'm at Amanda S. Gardner, GARDNER on Twitter, and facebook.com/TheDeepEndGames.
Sounds good. Have yourself a wonderful night.
Thank you. Good night.
Oh man, that was fun. A lot more show to do. Cole, you ready to tackle everything else tonight?
I'm as ready as I'm going to be. I have Dr. Pepper and cough drops and let's go.
Sounds good. Well, let us hit up news first of all. We missed this last week because we recorded the show early last week and this news hit after we already recorded. But Games with Gold for December have been announced. Xbox 360 has the game Child of Eden available now through the 15th. And then from the 16th through the 31st is Marlo Briggs and the Mask of Death, which... interesting, I guess.
I have no idea what that one is, but I am super excited for Child of Eden. I didn't get to play it when it first came out, and I wanted it for ages. So I get really excited when there's an old game that I had to miss out on, and we get it for Games with Gold. Like, I'm just like, oh my God, finally! It will sit in my backlog for 6 more years, but at least I have it.
I was excited about the fact that Marlo Briggs in The Mask of Death because I don't own it.
How do you not own a game? Like, how does that even happen anymore?
Seriously, that's why I was thrilled about it. I'm like, oh my God, I don't have that game.
What the fuck is Marlo Briggs anyway?
It looks to be like, some kind of like side-scrolling action shooter kind of deal. I don't know, it looks interesting, and it's free, and I don't have it. So that's win-win-win for me.
Yeah.
And then Xbox One, for the entire month of December, we are all getting Warhammer The End Times Vermintide, which should bump the player base for that up quite a bit. That's pretty cool to see. And from December 16th through January 15th, interesting choice here, Back to the Future of the Game 30th Anniversary Edition.
I am surprised by that one. But yeah, I was also surprised by Vermintide. And I'll tell you, because I made a statement that I was trying to win it when it came out from giveaways, because I'm a giveaway whore. And I tried to win it like hell. Like, I purposely sought out Vermintide giveaways, trying to win it. And I couldn't. I just didn't win it. I don't know how. I can win triple A's like I'm batting my eyes, but I couldn't win Vermintide. And so I was just like, the fuck? And I said, watch, by the time I win that game, ain't nobody going to be playing it anymore. Well, guess what I won 2 months ago? Vermintide.
Nice.
Ain't nobody playing it. And I was like, fuck the fuck off. I got nobody to play this with me. And, like, I tried to watch for it to go on sale and, like, prod my friends. Be like, man, you should really pick this up so we could play it sometime. I'd like to, you know, I want it, so come play it with me. You have to pay for it, but come play it with me. And they were like, well, we might get it if it goes on sale enough. And now I'm like, fuck all of y'all. You have no excuse. Everybody's playing Vermintide with me starting December 1st. That's just the way it is. Don't plan anything else in your schedule. We're playing Vermintide now.
Gotta love it. That's the way the cookie crumbles.
They're going to play Vermintide. If I have to fly across this country and randomly find my friends and tie them to their chairs with controllers in their hands so they can play Vermintide with me, that's what I'm going to do. We're playing it.
Man.
Vermintide is, yes, Mika, Vermintide is multiplayer based. It is very much like Left 4 Dead and Left 4 Dead 2, only instead of zombies, you have rat people.
Yeah, and swords.
Yeah.
And magic. Pretty much it. It's like it's a really medieval cool. Left 4
really
Dead.
Well done. I think it was originally a mod on PC. Like, it started its life as a Left 4 Dead mod, and then it just kind of exploded and became a legit thing all on its own.
That wouldn't surprise me.
So it's really well done, and it has that same kind of ebb and flow as Left 4 Dead did, and it's no Left 4 Dead 3, but it fills a void. So.
If you can get me 100% completion on Vermintide, I will play the fuck out of it with you.
I'm willing to fucking try.
Oh, you achievement whores.
Yeah, I've done some of it. I did manage to get to play some of it with Shiz and them. So basically, because I was like, new DLC come out. That's one of the other benefits to Vermintide, by the way, that people don't realize. If one person has the DLC and they party up, the other people can play the DLC even if they don't have it.
Yeah,
so,
that's good.
You know, there was new DLC that had come out, and I played it with them and got a few achievements. What was funny was there was, like, an achievement for getting some kind of rare sword that was only in the DLC, and I got it on our first game, and I don't think Shiz has ever got it.
Well, Shiz is a scrub, so what are you going
to
do?
That is Shiz, you know, but I did manage to get, like, some kind of magnificent, rare, extremely unusual weapon that I gave no fucks about.
Oh, man. Anyway, some other news. In addition to games with gold, PlayStation Plus's lineup for December has been announced. The PS3 is getting Siberia Collection, which is Siberia 1 and 2. I believe the first one is playable on Xbox One. And then a game called X-Blaze Lost Memories, which I believe is like another visual novel kind of thing. But they're both on PS3, and I don't have a PS3 anymore, so whatever. The PS Vita is getting Forma 8, which is cross-buy with the PS4, so decent enough. And then the game Wanted Core, which looks like some kind of top-down shooter-style game. It's from the people who made How to Survive, So it might be kind of decent, but I've never played it before myself, so I'm not too sure. And then the PS4 lineup is kind of underwhelming. The first one, solid game, Darksiders 2 Definitive Edition, but that was just part of that Humble Bundle that THQ did a few months ago, where you could get how many games for all, like, PS3, PS4, and Vita for, like, $10. That was one of them. So I know a lot of people who already have that game, and it just feels like a wasted slot.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then...
I think... I've never even played Darksiders, and I know I have that one.
I mean, the Darksiders games are great. It just feels like it's been done. I don't know.
Yeah.
And then the other game on PS4, Kung Fu Panda Showdown of Legendary Legends. Why?
I guess they're preparing for kids to be getting PlayStations this month for Christmas.
Yeah, solid kids brawler game, but... I don't know. There's so many better if you're dying to get a family game on there, what about Overcooked?
Yeah, true.
What about something there's like Yooka-Laylee?
A lot of better options. I forgot Yooka-Laylee was on PlayStation. There are definitely better options out there, but...
A Kung Fu Panda was like a decent brawler, but it's... I don't know. I think it's a terrible pick for PlayStation Plus. Game
anyway?
Like a year, maybe a year and a half.
I mean, really?
It wasn't a terrible game. It was a decent brawler. It's just, I don't know. I guess free is a good price for it. It just feels like it's not, I don't know.
Is it at least like an easy complete, like they have platinum, right?
Yeah. Instead of like a completion. It is, it is not an easy platinum. Someone, I was looking on the one thread on Reddit, like, well, this should at least be an easy platinum, right? And the one guy is like, no, because you need to hit max level in online play. And that requires you to win, I think he said something like 600 rounds online. And if you lose a round, you can lose XP.
Oh.
Yeah. Ooh. So it is not an easy plat.
Yeah, I don't know. There doesn't seem to be a lot in the way of redeeming qualities going on here.
Anymore, I've come to the point where I just read the comments on these announcement threads, and like the Xbox one was mixed of like, shitty games again, and then others are like, oh, Vermintide, awesome, Child of Eden, awesome.
Yeah.
Like, it was just mixed reaction. Some people excited, some people not excited, some people ambivalent. With PlayStation Plus, everyone was like, why? Just why? Why?
I can understand that, though. I'd be the same way.
I mean, PS Plus has had some good months this year, too, but for December, I think I would take Warhammer Vermintide over everything on PS Plus.
But, like, I feel like June and December are the 2 months when, you know, Xbox Games with Gold and PlayStation Plus need to be good. Because June is in that E3 span there. And December is when everybody's getting, you know, their consoles for Christmas. So, those are the two times you need to shine. And PlayStation really kind of didn't cut it this time.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think either of the lineups are stellar, but I could see more value in the Xbox lineup.
Yeah.
Especially between Vermintide. Child of Eden has been praised by many people as an incredible successor to Rez. And then, again, I'm personally excited to check out Marlow Briggs because it's a game I actually don't own. I'm excited about that. That doesn't happen often.
You're like Jack Skellington on Nightmare for... What's this? What's this? A game I do not own.
But people might be wondering about that whole Marlow Briggs thing. Like, what is that game? When it was announced what Games with Gold were... It wasn't part of the backward compatibility program, which we all know, of course, it will be happening. And it happened this week on Tuesday. Both Marlow Briggs and the Mask of Death and Peggle 2 are now part of the backward compatibility program. And people have been jumping on eBay trying to grab those Peggle 2 codes for like $6 as opposed to the 12 it sells for new. And then on Thursday, two more games were added with Sonic Adventure 2 and Earth Defense Force 2017.
Nice.
Which I am stupidly excited about the first Earth Defense Force game.
Huh. I don't think I've ever played an Earth defense. I'm not familiar with that.
It's like a B-movie bug shooter. It's amazing. It is amazing.
I haven't psyched for Peggle, even though I completed it already. I have legitimately completed Peggle on both the 360 and the One, and because I am hardcore Peggle master boss bitch. And so I don't own Peggle 2 on the One, though. I was playing it through EA Access. And then I stopped paying for it on EA Access because I was like, look, I bought it on the 360 when I was playing the 360. And just as luck would have it, it worked out for me. Now I could go back and play Peggle 2 because it's not backwards compatible again.
You know what makes me happy about you mentioning EA Access? Mm. It lets me segue to more news.
Man, I'm the best.
Dead Space 3 is officially part of EA Access.
It is. I didn't see that. I have never played a Dead Space game. I really need to pull my head out of my ass and do that.
Well, that one is co-op. So how about one of these days you and I just tackle Dead Space 3 together?
Yes.
Because I messed around with the first game and it scared the balls out of me. And I never got to go back to it, despite wanting to. Just, you know, things happen and then I forget. But Dead Space 3, playable on Xbox One, part of EA Access. So if you have access, you can play it for free. Co-op online. I say, fuck it, let's do this shit.
Let's do it. I like anything. I know a lot of people get really into like the whole, single player games are the best and that's the way they're meant to be played. I like co-op. I like throwing somebody and just dragging them through that shit with me. If I'm gonna go through something horrible, bitch, you're standing beside me. Let's go. I want somebody else to suffer too, because I'm a horrible person.
Dark Meek is saying the first two Dead Space are great, the third is okay-ish. I've heard the third is a great game, it's just not a great Dead Space game. Like, it was much more of an action bro-op kind of thing than with some scary atmosphere, as opposed to, you know, the first game, which were legit horror shooters.
I'm just focused on the word bro-op. I need to add that to my lexicon.
I started saying bro-op with the Army of Two games.
That's a good fit.
Yeah, it is.
I need somebody to bro up Gears of War with me, too.
I'll fucking do it. I love playing co-op stuff. I need more people to play co-op.
I have every single Gears of War, and I've never so much as got past the tutorial on the first one.
Well, let's do it. One of these days, let's just set aside a couple of hours and just co-op through, bro-op through a couple of games.
Give me, 24-hour notice so I can actually install shit, because I never keep anything installed. David laughs at me, too, my husband, because, I'm like, okay, did the review for that. Bye. As soon as I do the review, it's gone off the hard drive. He's like, but I wanted to play that. Don't got time. Don't care. Don't got enough hard drive space. Let's go. On to the next one. And so, somebody goes, let's play. Well, give me 24 hours notice so I can have everything installed, and fuck, I'll go. But first, I got to know to install shit.
Well, you pick a day, and whatever works for you, I'll make happen. Same thing I tell everybody who wants to come on the show for an interview. Pick a day, I'll make it happen.
That's what I tell people all the time. If you see me on Xbox and you want to play with me, don't wait for me to message you, because I'm horribly antisocial as fuck. And I will just sit there and watch YouTube until I get a notification. So-and-so has invited you to a party. Okay. See, people exist.
I never do parties unless people invite me to them, too.
Yeah, see, sometimes I used to just sit in a party and leave it. That way people could jump in and jump out whenever they wanted to. And I've got a pretty regular crew that I play with most of the time. We've been playing for 8 years now together. So they just, hop in, hop out as it comes. But now the party system, it kicks you out if you've been in a party by yourself for too long.
Hmm.
It just kicks me right. It'll say, Eternal Rage was missing from party. And I was like, by fucking who? I was the host.
Interesting.
And then I get all salty. And then, so now I don't do it anymore because it's just going to kick me out anyway.
Well, what are you going to do? Last bit of news I have that I saw this week is that the PlayStation Awards are being held. And I haven't really focused on categories or winners or anything like that, but there's a picture making the rounds now that the double platinum prize, whatever that is for, again, I haven't paid attention to these awards at all, at the Sony Awards has gone to Microsoft for Minecraft. So you're not going to let Minecraft cross play with every other platform, but you'll give it a PlayStation award.
That's Sony, amazing.
Sony, you dense motherfuckers. Get your shit together.
There's something about that that's absolutely amazing.
I don't get it.
They're the only ones that don't want to do the cross-play thing. It doesn't, I don't know, I don't understand the value of, like, I'm one of those odd people who just, I see no benefit to exclusivity and fragmenting the community. I don't care what system you're on. I'll give you grief if you're on a PlayStation, but, I mean, but aside from that, I don't generally care. You play whatever makes you happy. I just want you to play with me.
All right. Even better, because I decided I'm going to look up what these awards are, because PlayStation Awards 2017 winners announced. We're going to go through these. They have a handful of different awards. They have the Indian Developer Awards. These are titles that have contributed to the expansion PlayStation of PlayStation. It goes to 3-on-3 Freestyle, Tohu Gensu Wanderer Reloaded, and Undertale, which I think Undertale deserves for, you know, contributing to the expansion of PlayStation, although it would be nice to see that hit more platforms.
I didn't know that Undertale was on PlayStation.
Yeah. Console-wise,
I thought it was still Steam only.
Nope. I guess PlayStation paid for more exclusivity because, you know, they like doing that. PSVR Special Award. Three titles have contributed to PlayStation VR were awarded. That is Farpoint, Summer Lesson, Alice in Snow, whatever that is, and Resident Evil 7. Nice selection there.
Yeah.
They have the User Choice Prize, the top 10 titles voted by Japanese and Asian users, goes to Battlefield 1, Dragon Quest 11, Echoes of an Elusive Age, Final Fantasy 15, Horizon Zero Dawn, Nier Automata, Neo, Persona 5, Resident Evil 7, Uncharted The Lost Legacy, and East 8 Lacrimosa of Dana. Great selections there. They have the PlayStation Network Award. The top three network sales titles goes to FIFA 2017. Shocking. Phantasy Star Online 2, which they really need to get that fucking game in America already. And Rainbow Six Siege, which I didn't expect that in a Japanese award.
Yeah, that definitely caught me off guard there.
They have the gold prize, software with an accumulated shipment quantity of over 500,000 units. Battlefield 1, Call of Duty Infinite Warfare, FIFA 2017 and 18, Horizon Zero Dawn, Nier Automata, Neo, Rainbow Six Siege, Resident Evil 7, Uncharted, The Nathan Drake Collection, and Yakuza 6. They have the platinum prize, which are for titles that have shipped over 1 million copies. And that is Dragon Quest XI, Final Fantasy XV, and Grand Theft Auto V. And then here's that double platinum prize we were talking about of software with over 2 million copies shipped. There are three games listed. Minecraft PlayStation 4 Edition. Minecraft PlayStation Vita Edition. Minecraft PlayStation 3 Edition.
It just got better.
I don't know if those are all lumped together. They sold over 2 million, or if each one sold over 2 million. Either way.
It sounds to me like for the sake of the award, it would have to sell 2 million individually.
Either way, that is fucking hilarious.
That's amazing.
What's the best-selling game on PlayStation 4 in Japan? A Microsoft game.
Times three.
Oh, man, whatever.
Give all the gamer score, though.
shit. And they still can't play with other people because fucking Sony's stupid.
Poor saps.
Oh, man. Well, do you have any news that you want to talk about this week at all?
No, I was going to talk about Peggle, but you beat me to it.
I thought you'd be excited about the Life is Strange news.
Oh, I forgot. Go for it.
Yeah, for the bonus episode, Ashley Birch will be returning to voice her character in the bonus episode.
Max and Chloe both will be returning.
Now that the writer's strike is over, they've been able to return to the game.
Yes. Which is going to feel a little weird after having listened to somebody else beat Chloe up to this point.
Well, it's the whole age thing, right?
I mean, it's what, 2 years? How much does your voice change? I mean, if you're not a dude, not going through like the 12 to 14 year two range, but English, did I fucked up that whole sentence, didn't I? You were going to let it fly too.
I'm just letting you go.
Yeah, it's probably for the better.
you got to do you. Anyway, should we tackle some reviews?
Let's go.
All right, first game to talk about tonight is called Aquatica Turtle Racing, developed and published by Tianyu Studio Software Limited, released November 17th on Xbox One for $6.99. Exploring the meticulously crafted world in single-player story mode or multiplayer turtle racing your friends, it's an action-adventure game featuring multiple environments from shallow river, coral reefs, open sea, to the abyssal depths. Epic bosses and challenging levels. There are multiple ways to unlock all stages for easy access directly from the menu. Despite the name of Turtle Racing, this isn't a racing game. This is more, it felt more like an Echo the Dolphin style game where it's just an action adventure. You are a fish and you have to progress through these areas. The storyline, very, very little text is in the game. Very little direction in story. Very, you know, rarely now and then a character will say stuff to you, but it's never anything story heavy that I've encountered so far. It's just a lot of enjoying what's happening and reading between the lines for the story. It has a really, really cool minimalistic visual style, which I enjoyed. Back to the whole lack of text thing, there's just so many times in the game that you're not sure what you're supposed to do. And they'll try to help guide you through it, but like an item might start flashing of like, hey, pay attention here. I just wish, at least at the start of the game, there was a handful more guidance so you had an idea of what you were supposed to do or what you needed to do to accomplish what you had to do in the game. If that makes sense.
It does, because when I was looking at trailers and stuff for it, it kind of struck me as being aimed at kids. But then, like, if it doesn't really help guide you, then I don't imagine kids would do very well with it after all.
I mean, I could see this being something that a kid and a parent could play together, with the kid playing and the parent trying to be like, oh, well, why don't you try doing this? Or what's over in this area? It just seems like if it was strictly for children, there's just not enough guidance in the game to keep them moving. And even me, a grown up child, there were still some areas I was like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. There was a maze area in the game where you had to collect these orbs, and it took me a couple of times through before I realized that the doors you go through, they're one way doors, which I didn't realize at first. You had to collect all of the orbs, and there was basically one set path that you had to go through. It was a maze that didn't look like a maze.
And I wonder is there co-pilot setting? I wonder for like you'd be able to play it with the co-pilot app.
I'm sure you could play anything with the co-pilot.
Can you? Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Pretty much, because it just
makes... Well, then it would probably be a little more.
Yeah, the co-pilot thing just makes two controllers work on a single input.
Okay.
So you could do pretty much anything in co-pilot. I did really enjoy what was there, though. I was having fun with the game. A lot of trial and error, it seemed, in some of the puzzles of what happens after here. Oh, I died, back to a checkpoint. There are a decent number of checkpoints in the game, although I do wish some areas would have more frequent checkpoints, or at least kinder checkpoints. The one section involved a fairly long train sequence where you're a fish in a train, driven by a rat that is navigating a field full of spinning blades, because that clearly makes sense.
Well, I have questions. How is a fish on a train? How is the rat not drowning, or is it in the water, or why are there blades? And
well, the everything is on land, but the fish is in a water tank on the train.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that's how that happens. But before you even get on the train, there's a short section where you have to swim through the water and a boulder chases you, and then you get on a conveyor belt and then you're put into the train. And then there's the train section itself is fairly long. And if you mistime a jump and one of the blades hits you, or you don't hit a box and, you know, if you end up dying, you don't just restart back on the train or back to a checkpoint on the train. You go all the way back to the beginning of that section and have to, you know, go through the water, have the boulder chase you, go on the conveyor belt, get back into the train. It's just like stuff like that. That could have been avoided. Set the checkpoint on the train. So as soon as I get on the train, there's my checkpoint. Instead of the needless stuff that, you know, I don't have to replay this. I did this. I swam through the water 6 times. I don't want to do it a 7th. Stuff like that.
I feel like any time a game has a change of scenery, that should be when there's a checkpoint.
Eh, makes sense. Overall, it's fun, though. And there's a second turtle mode in the game, which, again, there was zero direction when I started this thing. I'm riding a turtle, and every now and then fish would show up on the turtle, and I thought I would have to shoot them, but I apparently just had to, like, walk into them to collect them. But some fish are bigger, so you have to shoot them. Or you could set a bomb down and push it into the longest time I was playing this turtle mode, I had no clue what the fuck I was doing, but I was doing it. It's just, there's some sections in the game just need a little bit of it doesn't even need to be a tutorial, just a pop up of like, hey, collect the fish, don't get eaten by these, stay alive.
Yeah.
The end. And that would have been enough. It was easy enough to just figure it out, but in the long run, you know, just quality of life stuff. Overall, though, $7, it's fun enough. It seems like a pretty easy story completion to get through and enjoy. I really enjoyed the visual style to it. The fact that they have multiplayer for the turtle racing is fun. And it's cheap enough at only $7 that, you know what? Fuck it, buy it.
Cool.
Next game to talk about is called Illville Return Instructions, developed and published by Tusha Works. I think I said it right. Released November 9th on Steam for $19.99. Illville Return Instructions is a gloomy 3D adventure set in an English village controlled by a secret organization. Try to escape from this town and distrust the people you might encounter. Even during the hardest moments, there is always someone keeping their eyes on you. But who do those eyes belong to? A friend or a foe? Dark Mika wrote in a review for this one, and Cole, you're going to read it.
Am I?
Yes.
Shit. No. All right, let's go. Illville Return Instructions is a first-person point-and-click puzzle game. It's more of a demo. It takes about 2 hours to finish. It's the first part of a planned series of games. I can't go into the story because what little is there doesn't make a lot of sense. The VAs in this game aren't very good. English doesn't seem to be their primary language, or maybe the script was poorly written. I'm not sure, but the way everything was spoken in conversations was just off. The audio, woo, English are hard. The audio otherwise.
You wrote the game.
Spoiler alert. The audio otherwise is pretty good. The graphics are okay, and they're not award-winning or anything, but they're not bad either. The characters, calling them 2D and bland would be overstating. Most of them have a few lines of dialogue, and that's it. They're never seen again. The character you play as in the opening has a long dialogue with an NPC, and your character comes off as a massive twat because of the writing and words chosen. This is also where you hear the worst dialogue that made me believe that the VAs aren't English natives. The mechanics to the game are pretty simple. Pick something up and it's added to the inventory. Typically, you use it immediately, and after its usage, it's gone. There is basic controller support. You can play the game with the controller, even remapping what buttons do with the controller. However, you can't move about in the menus with the controller, which is weird considering you can open and close the menus with the controller. The menus are all mouse work, and the menus up, with the menus up, you can still move around in the game, which I don't like, but it's not a big issue. You can't skip or speed up dialogue, which is annoying for a 1.5 to 2 hour long game. If you play it again, you have to do everything all over again, and it's annoying. In addition, there's no way currently to get back to the main menu to load up a save, to which you get 2 saves for the entire game period, which is another annoyance. To load a save, you have to quit the game completely, then reopen the game, and finally load to form the main menu of the game. For the $20 price tag, you get only this one short game, but it discounts the rest of them when they come up. By how much, I don't know. This is more of a demo than a game to me, and spending $20 on a 1.5 to 2 hour demo, one that doesn't have any real story, that's simply not worth it to me. $5, sure. $10, maybe. Anything more, no. The devs stated that they are basing whether or not they made more episodes on how well this one sells. As such, I can't get behind this unless it goes to a 50 to 75% off sale. This game doesn't have any replay value, and it's super fast to complete. I would like to see this game do well because I like these types of games, but at $20 for, well, this just isn't long enough or high enough quality for me to justify saying to even try it. Try it on sale or after more parts come out so we can see the quality of the links changes or not. Otherwise, and I hate to say it, but this is a pass, and that's from someone who loves these kind of games.
It's a bummer, but I guess, you know, they can't all be winners. Maybe they will hear reviews, hear some feedback, and rework it a bit before they start working on future episodes.
Yeah. I think it's always important if you know, when a game isn't what you think quality-wise it should be, or like there's areas that could be improved, give constructive criticism to developers. They listen a lot. And that's one of the things that's fortunate about being a gamer now. Like, if you had constructive criticism about Mario, you couldn't have said that shit back in the day.
No.
But if you play a game now and you're like, you know what? I just don't know what the fuck I'm doing here. And this game needs more instructions, or the English could use cleaned up a little bit. Devs hear that feedback these days that like they never have before. And it does affect the way that they approach updates and patches to future games. And there is the potential for, you know, developers to listen. Like we heard with, you know, Amanda regarding Perception. They saw the way that people were playing the game and they weren't getting, you know, the story the way that the developers wanted. So they changed things and they reworked the game. So it does make a difference to say, yeah, this could use a little bit of this or a little bit of that. Just don't be massive dicks and be like, this is the worst game ever. You know, because they're not going to listen to that.
Dark Meek in chat, someone brought up most of these issues to them in Steam, and the devs didn't seem much interested in listening to people, at least currently. Hopefully it's an issue where they're just trying to get the game out before they start addressing issues. It might be something where they're like logging issues that people have, but they're like, you know, we have to finish what we're doing before we could start fixing what we did. So let's just hope that they hear the feedback, they address the feedback, because that's the most important thing to me. A game these days, a game could come out in rough shape, but they could work on it and they can improve it. And as you and I talked about last week or the week before, Homefront the Revolution came out to a shitstorm of negativity. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was a really solid experience when we played.
I thought it was solid enough that I bought the DLC while it was on sale.
Nice.
How often do I buy shit?
I don't think you've ever bought anything ever.
Okay. So I bought the DLC. I did. I bought the DLC for Homefront on sale. Nice. And I'm if I ever get over pneumonia and can sit in a chair and be a functional human being again, I'd like to play it.
We could do that after Dead Space and Gears.
Yes.
But next game to talk about is called Game Dev Tycoon, developed and published by Greenheart Games. It released November 28th on iOS for $4.99. Game Dev Tycoon is an isometric business management game, putting you in the shoes of an indie game developer. Starting from nothing in your garage, increase your skills and knowledge with practice and game reports, and build your studio reputation from the ground up as you make your mark on the games industry. Our friend Jacob Garner checked this one out and wrote in his review, and this is what he has to say. Game Dev Tycoon by Greenheart Games and Rare Byte is, as you can imagine, a simulation strategy game involving you becoming a video game developer. You start out of your garage, hire employees, move to new offices, all while creating new video games. As you become more successful, all sorts of different possibilities for you open up, like attending E3, hosting your own gaming convention, creating your own MMOs, or even creating your own console. It's a lot of work to get to the top, and ideally, the game wants you to do that in the span of 35 years. Do that and you, quote, beat the game. The gameplay is fairly easy to pick up as you decide what kind of game you want to make, what graphics it'll have, what features you want to include. New technologies and game genres can be researched, and eventually you can hire an R&D group to create a console for you. I could have sworn they said something about them making peripherals for the console, but maybe that's just assumed that they're making stuff. Whatever. Anyway, various setbacks can occur, like employees needing to go on vacation, data breaches, bad press, etc., and you have to learn how to maneuver through all of it. Helps to have a decent knowledge of video game history to know what type of games work with which systems. Like RPGs did well on PS1 and Super Nintendo, casual games on iPhone and iPad, but after a while you get bored and do whatever you want just to see how it works. Anyway, getting past $200,000 in debt, I think it may get higher later in the game, but I can't remember, will cause your company to go bankrupt and have another company buy up all of your IPs, thus ending the game. I'd created around 35 games at that point and just moved into the Xbox and PS2 era, but so much research was required and 2D games weren't cutting it anymore. My company just couldn't compete. Thankfully, the game lets you start at your last save point, which I think was in the middle of the SNES/PS1 era for me, so I avoided my missteps. Now my company is about to have lasted for 100 years and hovers around $1 billion in the bank. If only we all had $1 billion.
I've got the goofiest grin on my face. This sounds like so much fun. Oh my God.
With my company's expenses, we could do nothing for over 10 years and still have money in the bank. Oh, so they're Nintendo. As you can imagine, the game is fairly addictive as you're always trying to stay one step ahead of your creditors, but it's fascinating to see how you might think $200 million is a lot of money, but easy to burn through when you've had 4 to 5 titles that haven't sold well. As you bring on new employers, you need to look at what skills they bring to the table and how much they expect to be paid. And as you train for certain roles, they'll become your go-to person for certain things like world design, sounds, music, etc. All this has to be managed well, otherwise your employees will get burnt out and quit, and then you have no game. My biggest complaint is that after you've beaten the game, nothing really new is introduced, so as long as you don't fuck up constantly, you should be fine. The game doesn't allow you to create any mobile gaming systems, which I was a little surprised by. Also doesn't encourage you to name your games, which is a feature I didn't realize was a thing. So I'm now up to game number 111, and we'll keep the trend going. Game 111. Hey, bro, what'd you get in this holiday season? Oh, game 416 just came out. It looks really good. The reviews of the games will sometimes reflect this, especially if you create a bad and subpar game. This game is as dull as the title, etc. At times, it also isn't really clear why certain games aren't doing well, despite them seeming to be your company's bread and butter. Doesn't make it clear if there's any audience fatigue, what isn't working. Sometimes the post-release game reports aren't really helpful at all, and it had my company going through a slump when it seems nothing we publish really clicks with the audiences anymore. Perhaps after 100 years, no new technological advances within the last 50, it's time for us to pack it in? The game doesn't make it clear. Being a mobile game, there's plenty to do and keep you occupied for 5 to 10 minutes at a time, although the first time I ended up playing the game, I went for 4 hours and suddenly discovered it was 2:30 a.m. You'll always want to release that next game, figure out what works, and you swear you'll go to bed once you figure out what'll get you that solid 8 rating. And then you realize 4 hours have passed and your phone's now 8% battery life. Game Dev Tycoon isn't a perfect game, but it's probably the most addictive and fun game I've played on iOS yet. It's got a lot of great stuff in it, and while there's definitely a learning curve to it, it's a game I absolutely recommend everybody go and try out. So that sounds really, really good. I'm curious to know, I know the PC version has a special pirate version out there. Have you heard about this?
No.
Where if you have a pirated version of Game Dev Tycoon, your games, after so long in the game, they won't sell because people are pirating the game. And it just gets to a point, like, people were posting on forums. It's like, no matter what I do with the game, no matter what I do with, you know, the metrics and everything else, my games just don't sell because there's too many people pirating it. And the developers are like, how'd you get your copy of the game? And then they shut up. It's like one of the greatest anti-piracy measures in a game ever, because it is just, oh, dude, why are all these people pirating my game? Bitch, why are you pirating my game?
When you find out the answer to that, let me know.
Oh, man. Jacob is not done with his email, though, as he goes on. Every once in a while, the SML podcast reviews movies, and I think the last one that got reviewed was Need for Speed. I don't know if he did that for us. That might have been something else he did. This time we have an independent documentary called Codumentary about the origin and rise of the Call of Duty franchise. I believe this was released through Devolver. It has been quite a while since I sent this to him, and I legitimately forgot that he was supposed to review this probably months ago. So thanks, Jacob. Written and directed by Jonathan Beals, the movie gets a few people who worked on the Call of Duty titles, a couple of regular gamers, some esports players to discuss how the Call of Duty franchise came to be, what the series means to them, gameplay styles, and where they think the franchise is going. I'm not the biggest fan, but I've played a decent amount of the titles and recently just revisited Modern Warfare last month. Don't exactly know where to begin to say this. Don't know where to begin with this, so I'll just say it now. I don't know who is supposed to be this film's audience. It gets too bogged down into COD stuff and talking heads for newcomers. Hardcore Call of Duty players probably already know a lot of this stuff, and people who don't know anything are probably going to get turned off from the get-go, if not from the final act of the documentary. The documentary feels very one-sided at times because we only get the story from 4 to 5 people who haven't worked on a Call of Duty title since maybe 2014, if not earlier. There's no official words from Activision, Infinity Ward, Treyarch, etc. They have some interesting things to discuss, but their interviews are cut up too much by the narrator discussing the Call of Duty games as they come out, resulting in talking heads that you immediately forget who they are and what they've done for the franchise. Takes forever to get through that, and then the final act happens where the documentary treats COD like it's God's gift to esports, and then follows a bunch of players for 30 minutes. What was already a slightly boring documentary becomes incredibly dull as we're treated to watching the players' faces and reactions as they sit there and play the game. Maybe people who follow Call of Duty esports would find this interesting, but for everyone else, the final act of the documentary is grueling. Which is a shame, because we are given 3 different plot lines that are briefly discussed and then almost immediately discarded, which seems they would have been infinitely more interesting to what we're given. A disabled gamer discusses how he plays Call of Duty and how he hopes more game developers will make future games more accessible. The formation, work, and success of the Call of Duty Endowment, which helps veterans find stable, good-paying jobs, and a team of female esports players discuss what they have to deal with on a regular basis as they try to compete in a sport hobby that is male-dominated. All 3 of these could have been interesting documentaries, but the real crux of Codumentary is that there's similar stuff on YouTube that discusses the material better and is able to break up the material into more digestible chunks. It's important that we get more documentaries covering video games, but this is not one that stands out. If you're a big fan of the franchise, I guess this might be worth a watch, but I can't recommend it for everyone else. Bummer to hear, because when I first saw the trailer for that, I don't know, like 4.5 years ago, when we first got it for Jacob to review, God, he's so fucking slow sometimes. Holy shit. I'm going to have to email him and be like, hey, I'm sorry it took so long for us to get this review done. My reviewer is just ungodly slow sometimes. But I thought the documentary, like the trailer, made it look interesting. I was kind of excited to check it out to see if it would give me a new sense of respect for the Call of Duty franchise and the players. But it just seems like all the interesting stuff that they could have focused on, they didn't.
Yeah, when you said Codumentary, I was kind of intrigued, because I like to get dev insights on how they create, like, the maps and stuff for Call of Duty. I remember watching an interview with some developers from Treyarch at one point, and they were talking about how they always tried to make their maps into three rows. So you had like, you know, there was like three lanes basically for traffic to be driven through. And it changed the way that I played on Treyarch maps because I started to visualize those three individual lanes as they were and tracking how other players would move along them. And like, then like when he started saying that everything was going off on all these other tangents, I was like, well, shit, then that's not going to give me what I'm looking for because I want to hear how the games are made and what kind of thought process goes into. Like, I'm a geek and I'm interested in how developers look at the way people play the games and how that affects how the game is created. Yeah. Sometimes you can realize you're playing games wrong, you know? And like, there's a better way to navigate. And that doesn't sound like it's there.
Maybe they're
because that's the kind of shit that I would like.
Maybe they're first time documentarians and they'll improve with time.
Maybe my little feminist ass might have to watch it anyway just for the feminine esports part, though. Like, I have no interest in esports at all. It just annoys me when I load up a game and there's all kinds of esports shit all over it. I'm like, I don't care. I'm just playing this shit on my couch without any pants because, you know, that's how I spend my days. Nobody's going to give me 10 grand if I go 30 and 0. But I can get 50 kills in team deathmatch. When am I going to get 10 grand?
Nice.
And I don't even wear pants and stand on the stage when I do it. I just do it sitting there because I can.
Anyway, this is normally the point where I would thank you for joining and move on to other reviews. But I just realized we never did our giveaway yet.
We forgot a thing.
We did.
How did we forget the giveaway?
I don't know, because I'm half dead. We do have the game Nightmare Boy to give away on Xbox One, thanks to our friends at Badland Games. We've got, let me double check my code list here, 3 copies of the game and 6 email entries for it. So we got to pick some winners here. You excited for this?
I am excited. We got like a 50% chance of winning.
Indeed. First email is from Aroto Tomato. And of course, on Twitter, we asked you to tell us why you want this game. Aroto says, "So the prodigal son returns, huh? Asking me why I want the game. You know me, Mr. Benjamin SML. I'm all up for new indie games, especially if they deal in darker themes. Why do I want Nightmare Boy spelled B-O-I? Because he's a dick.
Oh, Lord.
A very simple gentleman. It is a game from my wish list that looks creative. I like how the characters look and move. Everything kind of has a sticker look to it. Not too different from the likes of Stick It to the Man. Even now, looking at the gameplay footage, I feel like this is the spiritual sequel to Decap Attack we never got. Speaking about that, who owns the rights to Zombies Ate My Neighbors? You should talk to them and ask for a new one. But back to the subject, as a teenager, I was in a gothic gang. Oh god. We listened to all kinds of heavy music like Evanescence and Nightwish. Only the brutal stuff.
My eyes are glazing over. I don't know. I can't understand what's going on right now.
Evanescence, only the brutal stuff. Oh my god. And one day we decided to make a pact where we had to meet in the cemetery at midnight and drink wine, you know, like cool popular teenagers do. I gave up though on the next day. I heard no one showed up anyway. A few days later, I left the gang and started playing video games instead. Playing Nightmare Boy will be a full circle thing for me since I was a Nightmare Boy myself and I gave up on it to play video games. Mixing both will finally close this chapter of my life. Jesus
video Christ. Games while drinking wine. I have questions. Like, are you sitting there? Are you going to play Nightmare Boy while drinking wine and listening to Evanescence? And if not, you don't deserve it.
Pretty much. I just love my favorite joke from all of that is that Evanescence is brutal heavy metal music. That was incredible. Oh my god.
I remember reading a magazine article about them at one point where they were like, we're just using our music to bring God to people. And I was like, yeah. Okay.
Oh, shit. Next email is from Billy P., who says, I've been thinking about whether or not I want to buy Super Lucky's Tale. I don't know if it'd be worth the money to me, so I've been trying my luck at some of these Twitter contests, trying to win a code before I give in and buy it. No luck so far, though. I thought to myself, boy, what a nightmare. And then I saw your tweet, an email contest to win Nightmare Boy? So here I am. It might not be Super Lucky's Tale, but it might be even better, and I'm always down to attempt to win something from a good old email contest.
Those are, like, so widely different.
So, boy, what a nightmare that he can't win Super Lucky's Tale.
Do it now, Sizzlers! Be quick! Like a blinker!
Oh, man. The funny thing is, like, I've had people messaging me like, why haven't you done that many email contests recently? And I want to. These are some of my favorite things on the show, mainly because of some of the fucked up entries we get. It just comes down to what codes I have to give away. If I only have one code of something to give away, I'm not going to do an email contest because it's just not fair. Because then Aroto would win like 9 times out of 10. Next email's from a Latino Heat who says, good evening to the SML podcast. Growing up, I've had tons of nightmares, and as a boy, speaking of one that to this day still creeps me out, since I had the desire to always watch Chiller, a show my dad watched, which had to do with horror, I'd always be spooked out of the dark and often dream about sleeping in a dark room. And while asleep in the dream, I would actually be awoke in the dream and have a tall, dark figure pull the sheets slowly off of me as I laid in horror, watching this unfold. I would then pull the sheet over my head and hide under them in pure fear, hoping the dark figure would leave me alone in the dream. This is one of the many nightmares I've encountered as a boy, which I still love horror, which creates nightmares, which is one of the weird things this game, Nightmare Boy, brings as a unique platform game. Thanks so much for the opportunity to share my nightmare as a boy. How do I sum that up?
Dark figure nightmare. That
sheets nightmare.
Yes, there we go. I'm not one like minimizing the words. I'm the last person that has to do that.
Next email is from Eric Trill, who says, the first reason I would like to have a copy of Nightmare Boy is because it's a Metroidvania type of game with a SNES type of look to it, and everyone knows the SNES games are still fun to play. The main reason I would like to win a copy of Nightmare Boy is because I fear if I don't win a copy from the SML podcast, that not winning it will give me a nightmare. Boy, it would be terrible if that were to happen. Let's not risk it. Do the right thing. Make my dream come true. As always, thank you for the chance. Keep up the great work.
Who wrote that one?
Eric Trill. Not winning would be a nightmare. Boy. Oh, God. Next is Leon Claymore, who says, once again, you point me in the direction of a game I didn't know about and spikes my interest. Hope I win. I had a pretty lackluster Thanksgiving with no turkey. Aw.
No.
And final email from Daniel McCammon, who says, I'd really like Nightmare Boy so my wife can play it. She loves games that mix spoopy with a cute art style, plus 2D games are her jam. It would also help me get to my goal of 350,000 gamer score by year's end. Wants for wife and gamer score. Oh, wait, and we just got a very, 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 very last second entry. Like, it literally just showed up in my inbox from Michael Brody, who says, I always wonder, do I have a game or not? How do I check it to see if I have this game? Would I go to my Xbox One X? I don't think I have this game. I used to have bad dreams. My bad dreams are like going back to school, having to redo it, and not sleep in class. Ugh, a bad dream. I'm sure it would be fun to win, but I understand others deserve to win more after listening to the entries. Eric Trill deserves the win.
But I feel like you could have taken on that from the beginning and been like, you know what my nightmare is? Winning a code and then realizing I already have the game because I didn't know I had it.
Oh, God.
Because so that's a thing I've done.
Which doesn't surprise me at all.
And then you feel bad.
So let's recap here. Aroto gave us the story about Evanescence being brutal metal. Billy P says, boy, what a nightmare that he can't win Super Lucky's Tale. Latino Heat has the nightmare with the monster in the sheets. Eric Trill says not winning would be a nightmare, boy. Leon Claymore didn't get any turkey for Thanksgiving. Daniel McCammon wants it for his wife and for the gamer score. And Swizzlers wants Eric Trill to win. Seven entries, three codes. What are your thoughts? Do you have any headliners in mind? I think right off the bat, Aroto deserves one. Because I haven't laughed that hard at an entry in quite a while.
I feel obliged. Like, I have this horrible thing where I think Thanksgiving without turkey is like the ultimate sin. And so I kind of want to give Leon one just because it's not turkey, but it might like soothe the wound a little. Like, if you had to go through Thanksgiving and you ain't get no turkey, I would send you a plate of turkey if I could, because I probably still have leftovers in my fridge. Like, you need turkey in your life, but I don't have turkey, so here's Nightmare Boy.
All right, so Aroto and Leon are two winners. We have one more code. Comes down to Billy, Latino, Eric, Daniel, or Swizzlers.
This is tough, because, like, I award Swizzlers bonus points for getting in with the quickness.
But he's rejecting his claim to give to someone else.
He is. And if you can't even tell that you got a game or not, you probably need to calm your tits. And I can say that as somebody who needs to calm her tits on how many games are on her hard drive. Not hard drive, ready to install, because I don't even have a big enough hard drive for this shit.
You should get another hard drive.
Yeah, I know, right? I'm going to sell David's body on Craigslist so I can afford one.
So, one more time, Billy, who says it's a nightmare that he can't win Super Lucky's Tale. Latino Heat, who had the nightmare with the sheets. Eric, who says not winning would be a nightmare, and he's a fan of SNES-style games. Daniel, who wants it for his wife and for gamer score. And then Swizzlers, who wants Eric to win.
You know, I'm going to say I give bonus points to Daniel, too, because a lot of people don't say, oh, I just want the game for the gamer score. Like, hey, at least you're honest. That's what we're all really here for. We're achievement whores.
So my thoughts narrow it down to Billy and Eric. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. Out of Billy and Eric?
Or if you have other thoughts, like if you had to narrow it down to any two people, who do you narrow it down to?
If I had to narrow it down to two, yeah, I'd say Eric and Daniel. Like I said, I get bonus points for the whole honesty thing. So yeah. I'd narrow it down between Eric and Daniel, which means we agree on Eric.
We agree on Eric, and Swizzlers also said Eric should win. So Eric Trill, you are our third winner of Nightmare Boy.
Congratulations.
Congrats to Aroto, to Leon, and to Eric. Thank you, everybody else, for entering. I promise I want to do more email contests. It just comes down to what kind of codes we have to give away. I remember I got an email like 2-3 weeks ago. It's like, you haven't done an email one in a while, but you do them on Gleam all the time. It's like, are you going to do email contests? I'm like, I want to, they're more fun. Not only are they more fun, but they mean I don't have to do something on the show. Like, this is free time. But, that's it for the contest. That is it for the reviews with you. I'm going to pretend that there's some kind of shitty edit here, and I'm going to do reviews with other people. Cole, do you have any final thoughts to sum everything up?
No. Thanks for having me around, though.
All right, next game to talk about is called Xenoraid, developed and published by 10 Tons. It released November 17th on the Switch for $9.99. Intercept the alien threat and missions that play out differently every time. Pilot skillfully to line up devastating bursts of fire. Switch between four fighters during combat to bring in the best weapons for each situation. It's classic shooter action with modern features. And bringing us the hot scoop on this one, Tim Akabas, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing quite well, sir.
What's the news flash on this one?
I mean, I guess
no one gets that joke.
It's not much of a... Yeah, I know. We don't live in... I don't know. Is it viral? Is it getting the clicks? I don't know. This game came out 2 weeks ago. It took us a while to get a recording together. It's been busy.
It's holiday. Like there was a holiday or something.
There was a holiday. I was on vacation. Then I was doing house things. And I don't know. It's been, yeah. But, yeah. So, yeah, let's talk about Xenoraid here.
Yeah, tell me about it. What is Xenoraid?
Xenoraid is a classic vertical scrolling shooting game with a lot of neat twists to it. So the story is, I don't know, some aliens are like coming into the solar system and we assume they're bad because we're apparently Americans in the game. So we want to shoot them. We deem them hostile and we must fight back. And, so the aliens are, and in fairness, they do seem pretty shitty. Like they are trying to like kill you. So whatever. Maybe perhaps we assume correctly. Who knows?
Probably.
So yeah, you know, far flung future got, space bases and whatnot. So the aliens are pressing into our galaxy from the outer regions, trying to get to Earth. And you are kind of the game is broken up in chapters set around different bases. So you'll start up a base, a chapter or whatever. And there's like a little bit of story text flavor dialogue in between missions. And yeah, you have your squadron of four ships. They can permadie. If a ship is destroyed on a mission, that ship is gone and you'd have to purchase a new one. That did not happen to me. Or if it did happen, I fucking reset. Cause who wants to do that? Who wants to live with the consequences of their decisions?
You cheater.
This is America. But boy, are we living with it now. So anyways, so you got your squadron of four ships and your ships have different abilities, different shots, different sub weapons. Sometimes you'll have a couple different kinds of ships. Sometimes you'll have four different kinds of ships. Sometimes, you know, whatever. And you can switch between them on the fly in the mission. So you'll be going through and you'll just hit one of the face buttons on the switch. This is a switch game. So you'll hit one of the face buttons and it corresponds to one of the ships and your ship will kind of duck out. And then the next one will fly in after a few seconds, which actually creates a neat little dodge mechanic. Like if your ship is about to get railed by something, you just hit the switch ship and then it'll duck out and you'll have a few seconds to kind of navigate the new ship in without taking damage, which is neat. Something that's really different about this game that I thought initially was going to make me hate it is in most vertical scrolling shooters, like you got your ship on the bottom and it just shoots straight up the screen, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's like most of them. In this game, when you push like left or right, your ship will you'll see the nose go to the left or right and your shots will follow in that direction.
Interesting. So it's not just standard left and right movement.
No, like, so you have to kind of aim your shots. I know this sounds crazy, but it's a real departure from what I was used to in my scrolling shooters. And initially I was like, oh, this seems like it was a terrible decision. But you know, after playing the game, I'm like, no, it's just different. It's just a little different. It takes a little bit of getting used to, but it's neat. It gives the game a really different feel from like probably any other scrolling shooter you've played. I can't think of anything off the top of my head that uses a mechanic like that. And initially it is offensive, but once you get used to it, it's like, oh, okay, this is neat. This feels different than what I'm used to. The way the missions play out is basically there is a number of ships, of enemy ships that you have to destroy. And once you destroy them all, then you move on to the next stage. And like ships will go off the bottom of the stage, then loop back around up the top. So you do eventually have to kill them all.
Like Pokemon, gotta kill them all. That's the same,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I think that's how the game goes. Gotta kill them all. I've never played one of those games. And in between, you earn credits while you're shooting things and for finishing missions. And then between missions, you will want to repair your ships, which will cost money, but you can also buy upgrades. There's upgrades that will affect all of your ships. Like there's one, there's like an armor buff, like jerking off motion over here. But yeah, it's just a basic armor buff, but it's the first thing I buy every time. There's like an armor buff. There's like an anti-missile thing you can equip all your ships with. There's like a bunch of stuff there. But then each ship will also have individual upgrades. So you can upgrade this weapon so it shoots faster. You can upgrade this so it has like a larger area of effect. Like your basic weapons act on kind of like an overheat mechanism. So if you ram on the button for 10 seconds, it'll overheat and you'll have to wait for it to cool off. Or you could just switch to another ship. And then your sub weapons, which can range from like missiles to like cluster bombs to EMPs, those get a like a set number of charges per mission. So you can upgrade that stuff between missions, and it's cool. And then, yeah, so you'll go, you'll have, I don't know, like a dozen or so encounters on a particular level, and then you'll move on to the next base, in which you kind of, you start the whole progression over again, which sounds annoying, but you're given different ships, so the upgrades are different. For the most part, like, those upgrades are different. So, and then, you know, you move on, and then you go to the next thing, you move on. So it's just, it has a good progression to the, like, the entire game, in that you're getting new ships with different upgrades that you have to kind of figure out different ways to play around. And then, you know, the enemy ships are changing and making you, reevaluate your tactics. And you might want to say, like, you know, there's ships later on that have shields. So you might want to hold out your one ship, your one large gunship that has an EMP for when that ship comes out, switch that one in, shoot the EMP, and then blast it, then switch another ship in to blow it up.
Nice.
And it's cool. It's cool. It's fun. The only, like, real problem with this game is the production values are kind of garbage. Like, I shouldn't say garbage. They're very adequate.
Yeah, like, but way off, with, like, words, Tim.
Yeah, coming off, like, Rive, which I played a couple weeks ago, which is a really good-looking game. Like, this is, like, very basic-looking ship designs, extremely basic-looking backgrounds, like, the character models in between missions. It's just very, like, okay, they're fine, they're there. Like, the music or the sound is nothing to squawk about. And that's just kind of the downer of it. But
the gameplay is solid.
Yeah, the gameplay is really something neat. If you can just kind of get over the fact that it's not, like, the prettiest looking game out there, I think you can have a pretty good time with it, for sure. And I was playing it, like, every three missions or so, it checkpoints you. So that's pretty good for on-the-go gaming. That's kind of what I was doing. I was off during Thanksgiving week. So I would just kind of pick up the game, like, play, through a couple checkpoints, put it back down, pick it back up, play through a couple checkpoints. But, yeah.
Nice. And I'm guessing the whole randomly generated element keeps it fresh every time you play, huh?
Yeah, well, it doesn't randomly... I don't know that it randomly generates your ships. Does it? Did they say that in the thing? God, that would explain so much. I didn't play it through a second time yet, but...
That's right, because you keep resetting when you lose someone.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
You quitter.
I am a quitter. Yeah, so, but that's, yeah, it seems like it's got some good replay value. It's fun to
play. Nice, so $10. What is your verdict on this one?
Yeah, that feels like a buy. It might be, like, if you're not a shooter person, it might be more of a try. If you're, like, a super apprehensive shooter person, it might be a try. But I think if you are into shooting games and you want something different, you should definitely be checking this game out, because it is something different than just, like, all of the, you know, the bullet hell type games. It's not similar to, like, you know, classic arcade stuff like 1942 and whatnot, or Gradius. Like, it is its own thing that stands on its own and is really cool.
Nice. Sounds good. Well, Tim, thank you as always for coming on and chatting about this. Do you have any final thoughts to sum it all up?
Oh, I'm just so happy I could give Xeno Raid a good Xeno rating. Oh, man. I panicked there in the moment because I thought I couldn't remember what my pun was that I thought of.
So you planned that one out.
I did. I thought of that one ahead of time.
I don't know if I should be impressed or disappointed. All right, next up, we got our good friend Tom Miller joining to talk about a couple of games. Tom, how are you doing, man?
Oh, things are going all right here in the Pacific Northwest, where it's dark 24 hours a day.
Yeah, it's that time of the year where the sun just doesn't exist that much anymore.
Yeah, not so much. You know, that's why I'm staying inside and playing video games.
Playing video games. What else are you going to,
like,
do, man?
A nerd.
You fucking loser. Pot, kettle, pot. But anyway, let's talk about these video games that you're spending your time with. The first one is called Sumo Man, developed and published by Tequila Bite Studio, released March 28th on Steam for $16.99. Sumo Man is an adventure puzzle platformer with advanced physics, destructible objects, and the ability to reverse time. Solve various physical puzzles, trying to keep this unstable Sumo Man on his feet in challenging environments. Tom, what did you think of Sumo Man?
So, it's a really interesting game. you know, as you mentioned, it's a puzzle adventure platformer. So I'm thinking, oh, last week I did Max, The Curse of Brotherhood, and sort of a similar genre where you're going through the world trying to, I'm going to close down my Facebook window here. Don't want those notifications. So yeah, you're going around the world solving puzzles. It's a lot of physics-based stuff, yes. And, you know, it's like you're a sumo man. You're a sumo who, like, comes back home to find everybody in the town and in the area to be asleep. And you got to, you know, figure out what's going on, why everybody's cursed. So it's an interesting story. And I like – it's interesting because in most of these games you're playing as, like, either a kid or some, like, pretty agile person. So to play as, like, a 300-pound sumo wrestler is, like, it's a really cool change. It's a change of pace. And it works. For the most part, it works. The controls I find to be a bit of a mixed bag. So he has different, like, sumo techniques. You can do, like, a shoulder bash, and you can do, like, a ground pound type of thing. And those moves feel great. You know, it really has like a visceral, like smashing into stuff. And they did a really great job with, you know, kind of making it feel like you're really like throwing your whole body at something. And also, for some reason, this guy can run like 40 miles an hour. He's like basically like Sonic the Hedgehog speed of movement, which is kind of hilarious. Just like, and because you have a pretty high jump too, it's just like, I don't know, just seeing this guy just like charging through stuff, and it's just like a whoop, 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 whoop kind of thing. It's pretty wonderful. Where the controls kind of suffer a little bit is when you have to do a lot more precise movement.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's very momentum based. You don't really have air control. And because you have so many different velocities that you can be going, it can be really tough to judge, you know, how fast you need to be going. And also you end up like slipping off platforms a lot. And, you know, it kind of makes it a little bit more frustrating than it probably needs to be. And let me see. But like, even though, I don't know, like it's, the game is just beautiful to look at though. There are a ton of different environments, and they're all pulled off really well. You have like the more natural areas, like you know, a seashore, and you go through like a cave system, and then you end up going through like temples and this big like mechanical castle, and it all looks really cool. I think they did a really great job with that, and also the music is just delightful. I really enjoyed it. So yeah, the game can be kind of annoying sometimes, but the game is also really charming. I have enjoyed it. The levels are long. They have a lot of really clever puzzles in them that really put your like knowledge of the tools that you have to the test. And, you know, even though it's kind of janky sometimes, it's janky in a funny way at least. So like sending your guy like flipping off the edge of a platform, you know, even if you don't mean to do it, you know, I found myself laughing even when I screwed it up. So, so that's nice. And also you don't die. Like you said, or like it says in the description, you have the ability to reverse time. So it's sort of like a braid type of thing where if you fall off a platform, you have like 20 seconds of like rewind time. So you can replot it. And, I don't know. It's kind of a nice alternative to, just like having to redo an entire section if you miss a jump.
Very true. Yeah. So overall, for $17, what are your thoughts on Sumo Man?
So I think it's worth it personally. Even though I was kind of annoyed by it sometime, it's balanced out by just how much fun it is and how much charm it has. I think it's a really solid puzzle platformer, and I think it'd be worth checking out.
Sounds good. Moving on, I'm going to do one quick. It is called Bush League Hockey. It was originally released on the name Old Time Hockey. I guess some kind of copyright issues had them change it to Bush League Hockey, developed and published by V7 Entertainment, released November 29th on Xbox One for $11.99, previously out on PS4 and Steam. Aggressive hockey is back in town. Experience hockey the way it was meant to be played in this old-school arcade-style hockey game where blood on the ice is just another day at the rink. 70s afros, big mustaches, no helmets, dirty hits, bench-clearing brawls, goalie fights, stick fights, ref abuse, and locker room language. That's Bush League hockey. this game is pretty insane. It is a, you know, standard 5-on-5 hockey game with the rules significantly lessened. So if you want to slam someone into the boards and then start a fist fight, go for it. Yes. If you would rather try treating it like a Sim-style hockey game, I don't know why you're doing that, but I guess more power to you. This is definitely not meant for Sim hockey fans. The fact that this game, even in the control schemes, like they have a standard control scheme, which feels more like the NHL series. They have a two-button control scheme for morons or people who want it simplified with just like pass on one button, shoot on the other. And then they have a retro style button layout, which is again mostly the same, although on defense you could add some extra abilities to the X button to like hook your opponents, stuff like that. But the thing that most sums up what audience this game is for is in the fact that they have a beer mode control scheme.
Okay. So you can drink and play at the same time?
Where you can play the game either right or left-handed only.
Okay, yeah.
Movement done on the analog stick, whichever side you want to use, and then shoot and pass are done with the bumpers.
That sort of sounds like a nightmare, but...
That way, you're using one hand to play a hockey game and your other hand to hold and consume beer. It's crazy how much thought has went into the different control schemes in the game. Yeah. Unfortunately, the game itself was kind of a letdown for me. I know that this has been out on other platforms. They've been tweaking it and improving it. The game just overall still feels, I don't know, like it's missing something. It's like stuck in between the NHL games and then that NHL Hits game that came out a couple of years ago that was just like over the top arcade hits. It's like they're trying to do both things to a lesser degree, where it's not a sim game, but it has plenty of sim elements. It's not an arcade game, but it has plenty of arcade elements. And I feel like it just needs to pick a side. The games feel too slow. Characters move too slow. I know the point in story mode isn't necessarily to win all of the games because you have three objectives that you have to do in a game and you don't always have to win to move on with the game. Winning is cool, but you don't have to because it's a story about a team that's fucking terrible to begin with. the problem is like they'll give you goal or they'll give you objectives to do in the game, like hit this character, like, the whole time I'm playing the game, like, is this character I have to hit going to have, like, a name pop up above him or, like, an arrow of, like, hey, this is the dude you got to beat up? Nothing ever happens. So I'm, like, just trying to check all these guys to accomplish this goal. And in the meantime, they are scoring on me like crazy because I can't land these big enough hits. I don't know if part of that is because they put the hustle button on the analog stick. So the one that you're using to move around, you have to hold down in click format to hustle as well. And I felt like I couldn't find what I needed to do what I was supposed to do. And the whole while in the meantime, the opponent is just like score, 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 score. Huh. So I ended the very first game that I ended. I didn't accomplish any of the goals. I was close to one. The one was to not give up any power play goals. And I lost that in the last 10 seconds because I was frantically trying to find who I was supposed to hit. But I held them off most of the game. But again, the winning and losing isn't supposed to matter because you are the worst team in the league. Funny for me, that team is from the Schuylkill Valley area in Pennsylvania, which is where I am.
Nice.
Like, Ashley grew up in Frackville, which is in Schuylkill Valley. The team that they made, like, doesn't exist. It's a fictional team. But they're from, like, Pottstown, PA. I'm like, oh, my God, I know all of these places that they're talking about. Which doesn't happen often when I play a game. Like, it's not...
Yeah, really.
You're I would be amazed if I ever start up a game and it's like, welcome to Berwick, Pennsylvania. What the fuck? What the Maybe fuck game like, is that?
It chooses where your team is from based on your GPS coordinates or something. I don't know.
That'd be funny. The Berwick Bulldogs just had another winning football game. What the fuck is going on with this game? That would blow my mind if some game, because it's always like New York or generic like Metropolis City.
Yeah.
You never see like small towns that are real show up in games. So that was pretty interesting. Yeah. Visually, the game has, it's a mixed bag of visuals. I really enjoy the old school look to the game and the cel shaded look, but even still, things could look kind of cluttered and clunky. Content wise, there's a lot to do in the game as long as, you know, you can get into the flow of things and, you know, and just get good scrub, I guess. I don't know. My biggest gripe really does come down to the fact that I wish instead of trying to straddle that line between sim and arcade, they just went full on in one direction.
Yeah.
Because a game like this, like, I don't expect to get thrown into the penalty box in a game that's encouraged around beating the shit out of people. But I did.
Yeah. It does definitely seem like it was trying to go for that more arcade feel to it. So
it's like cross hooking or whatever the fuck the penalty was, and they threw me in the penalty box. I'm like, what the shit? What the shit?
What the shit?
Last thing I want to mention about the game, soundtrack in it is awesome. It's all like punky hockey, like old time hockey. There's some really funny songs in the game too. If you want to check them all out, the game actually has a set list in there that you could just listen to all of the licensed songs one in a row. Some really cool stuff in there. So props for the soundtrack. Overall, given the fact that it's only $12, it is a cheaper game. I do want to give it a try. I think there's going to be a lot of hockey fans on Xbox who are tired of the mainline NHL series, and there's plenty to enjoy in this game. I just wish it was more focused on what it wanted to be. Cool. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
But one last game, final game to talk about on the show tonight is called Hiyaki Castle, developed by Asakusa Studios, published by HappyNet, released November 15th on Steam for $24.99, a fantastical world based on an ancient Japanese folklore, Hiyaki Castle, a mysterious castle built in a land of exile. The castle is brimming with mysteries and fantasy. Slay the Lord of Hiyaki Castle, new strategies and puzzle solving by dividing parties. I love, love, love when games have descriptions like that.
Yeah, it doesn't really tell you much about the game, but it is definitely colorful.
So since they didn't tell us about the game, Tom, tell us about Hiyaki Castle.
Yeah, so Hiyaki Castle, it's a strange game, but it's a dungeon crawler. It's sort of in the vein of Legend of Grimrock, or if you're more old school, Eye of the Beholder. So it's a first-person perspective, and you're going through different levels of a castle to try and get to the top to slay the Lord of Hiyaki Castle. The plot is really bizarre. It involves this sorcerer like teleporting people from the court or whatever, and you have to go and find them. I don't know what's going on, but it's cool. And it is, unlike a lot of those games, it is set in feudal Japan, so it has a very different setting, a very different aesthetic to it than a lot of them do. They tend to go more like D&D or like medieval style. So it does, like, it gives it a different flavor. You have the ability to choose between humans, or you can be like a tengu, so like a bird person, not like Dan Harmon, but like, you know, or you can be an oni, a demon, or you can be a cat person, which is pretty great. I heard tell of a lot of people calling their cat person like Garfield and Heathcliff and stuff, so that's cool. Like, other than its setting, the one thing, and it does mention it in the description of the game, is you have a party splitting mechanic. So at any moment, you can take your party of four characters and split it into two groups, which then you control individually. And this is something, it's necessary to do it to solve a lot of puzzles, and there are some enemies that you can only attack from behind, so you have to do, like, pincer attacks, which I think is a cool idea, and it's something that I hadn't seen in a first-person game before. I do think it's probably better in concept than in execution, because, like, all the action is real-time, so when you have, like, I don't know, to control two first-person parties at once to do things that require timing is really, like, it's just this juggling act, and it's kind of unwieldy. And also the split screen view that comes up when you split your party up, just kind of, like, compresses all the graphics, and it looks a little bit weird. But it has fun gameplay for the most part. I caught myself, like, really getting absorbed into the worlds in, I don't know, I've always been sort of a fan of the dungeon crawler genre in general. You have all these really labyrinthine worlds, and you have, like, you have, like, you can really kind of get lost in these worlds, and I caught myself playing it for longer than I'd really intended to, which is cool. It's always nice when that happens.
Yeah, always a sign of a good game.
Yeah. The monster designs are really crazy sometimes. They're all based in, like, Japanese folklore. So you have, like, snake people and, like, sentient lamps that shoot fireballs at you. Some of them are just really bizarre. You got, like, possessed suits of samurai armor that, like, slash at you. I don't know. I really thought there was a lot of creativity and really good art that went into the creatures that you fight, and I thought that was one of the highlights of the game. The rest of the graphics, I don't think, fared quite as well. A lot of the areas do tend to look pretty samey, and without looking at a map, often, you know, it was kind of hard to tell, you know, am I in this part of the dungeon or this part? And, like, where do I need to go? And I think the game is sort of, like, trying to simulate you going insane as you're going further and further into this. So I think it was probably intentional, but...
Well, that, and I know a lot of dungeon crawlers like to keep things looking very similar to make you get lost.
Yeah.
And in bird person culture, that's considered a dick move.
It is kind of like, it's a staple of the genre, and I don't really like that that's the case too much. It's kind of what keeps me from getting further into them a lot of the time. But overall, I did enjoy my time with Yaki Castle. I think that, so the game is $25. I think that maybe if you're not, like, already a fan of the dungeon crawler genre, you might want to pass or put it on your wish list for later. If you are a fan of stuff like Grimrock or Eye of the Beholder or stuff like that, I think it's definitely worth taking a look at, though. It has some cool ideas and the unique setting, and, you know, it has pretty much anything that you'd be looking for in a dungeon crawler.
Sounds good. Seems like it's a fairly solid dungeon crawler. But the price might be the small thing holding many people back.
Yeah.
And that's what Steam sales are always for.
Oh, yeah.
Guaranteed within a year and a half, this game will be 14 cents. Because that's what Steam does.
Devaluing games since whenever.
Oh, man. Well, Tom, always good having you on talking about these games. Yeah. Do you have any final words to sum up the reviews and to end the show?
Oh, well, I just started playing Cuphead this afternoon, and that's good, too. And, yeah, I know everybody's playing it, but if you haven't, it's good.
Did you know that the SML podcast is giving away a copy of Cuphead?
I think I heard tell of that.
You got to check us out, the SML podcast on Twitter. Look for our tweeters and our retweeters. We are giving away one copy of
Cuphead.
Yes. One lucky person will get Cuphead on Xbox One because, Black Friday at GameStop, they were selling Cuphead digital code with, like, a limited 45 vinyl.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, I want the vinyl. And Ashley's like, don't you already have the game? I'm like, I could do a contest for that.
Very good.
So, I guess final words, go enter our shit.
Yes.
Oh, it's that special time. So much the people we touch from singing some songs. You help me to sing, we bring you along. Now how the days are still stressful. Despite all that, it feels special. Kinda warms my heart like an incubator. Seeing Rockefeller Center with a rink of skaters. Kids that still believe in magic. The twinkle in their eyes when they receive a present, a holiday surprise. Some get anxiety, suffer silently, but I'ma try to be more optimistic than most. I know folks sleeping in the cold. So much suffering around the globe. I put a prayer in the air cause I know that it's rough, y'all. But positivity above all. That this life on earth is a one-off. And I need you to know that I love y'all. I love y'all.
They used to have me under pressure. Yo, the holidays can be a stressor if you want with lesser. It's just a snapshot of a time, but not on Instagram. Prophet Muhammad said always keep the ties between your fam. Still it's no more Santa Claus and all the new toys it could bring ya. Got me doing Kwanzaa now, shout out to Maulana Karinga. The first day is Umoja, then it's Kuji Takalia. Ujima, then Ujama, next day is Purpose or Nia. It's all about the unity and self-determination. If we build up our communities, then we could birth a nation. Elevate your powers as we celebrate what's ours. While your family is here, it's best you delegate your flowers. I hope your holidays amazing and your days are sunny. And you give your final dollars to a kid who raising money. Creativity and faith, but we call it Imani. Light up the Kanara tomorrow, man, Habari Ghani.
Blatant
in our pajamas, me and mama sipping tea and burning incense like it was some scammer. Wrapping presents with Christmas tunes playing on the boombox. Her in pink house shoes, me in white tube socks. Now it's different. Heard that she ain't even put a tree up. When we meet up, all she want for Christmas, some time to put her feet up. Not worry about the bills, just some time with the fam. That's the plan. Some would call it bland, but I understand.
My Christmas nights.
Neo.